Today's program is brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm in Vermont, a producer of award-winning handmade cheese from goat and cow milk. For more information, visit considerbardwellfarm.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Love Bites, coming at you live from Heritage Radio Network. Today is Monday, March 7th. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Raposo. I write about people who make food. You can find my work and me as wordsfoodart.com. I'm 34, straight, and single.
And I am your other host, Ben Rosenblatt. I am an actor, writer, musician, occasional bartender, and server. You can check me out at benrosenblattactor.com. I am 33, straight, and gleefully single.
Gleefully single. And today, Benny, your I'm an actor, find me at Ben Rosenblatt Actor, has particular significance, does it not?
I guess it does.
It does, because today is the Handsome Actor Show. We are joined.
Well, thankfully, there's two handsome actors here to fulfill that.
You know how handsome
niche.
I think you are. Oh. I'm the luckiest girl in the world. I get to spend every week with you.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Yeah, but we're going to shake it up today. We've got two other handsome actors in their mid 30s in New York City in the studio with us, Joel Ruben Gans and Jonathan Wiener. Hi, guys. Welcome.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. God,
ooh, their voices are
they're
so deep.
Ready.
I need to get, hey guys, welcome to the studio.
Well, you do that with the, and I'm Ben Rosenblatt. You can rock that deep voice, Benny.
Thank you.
Deep, deep voice.
Thanks, baby.
Yeah. So today Benny and I are not going to have a session talking about our current dating situations, which I am so happy about right now. So instead, we're just going
to
have...
There's so much juice you've got to look forward to next week. So stay tuned for that because there's a lot going on in Jacqueline's dating world.
I'm a happy gal. But so today, instead of us talking about our dating lives, we're going to have like two roundtable-ish discussions with our guests. First, at the top of the show, we're going to talk about being an artist and how that affects your confidence and how that affects your relationships, both dating and otherwise, and the challenges these guys are all facing. So I'm excited to sort of take a backseat and just talk to them through some of these challenges and triumphs. And then after the break, we're going to come back and I'm going to ask them about man parts and things like that. because I was having a conversation with one of our guests a couple weeks ago, and I was learning some things I didn't know that I had not known before. So after the break, if you are of a certain age and are not easily shocked, come back and listen.
If you're under
to
18, you got to shut off the radio. I promise.
I think this is where we're going to get one of those like red explicit or whatever banners that Heritage has to put on our.
We're just going to have like a beep going through
every
like,
time.
Yeah.
But first, let me introduce the guys more thoroughly. So I've got miniature bios here for them. Joel Ruben Gans has worked in theaters all over the country and at home here in New York City at the New York City Fringe and on Broadway in War Horse at Lincoln Center Theater. He's an associate artist with Faction of Fools, a Commedia dell'arte troupe in Washington, D.C. He received his B.A. from Emory University and his graduate degree from the International Theater School of Jacques Lecoq in Paris, France. Joel also teaches movement technique and works as a movement consultant. Hi, Joel.
Hi.
Welcome on.
Thanks.
Jonathan Wiener, my boobiest of all boobies, most recently performed at the Orlando Theater in Spamalot, playing Lancelot, the French Taunter, the Knight of Knee, and Tim the Enchanter. Off-Broadway, he's been seen in My Big Gay Italian Wedding and My Big Gay Italian Funeral. Internationally, he has performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, as well as a lead soloist aboard two of the Disney Cruise Line ships. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Johnny. So to kick off our conversation, the reason why I sort of wanted to have this show is I've had similar conversations with you guys about how hard it is to be a full-time artist in New York City. You guys have all went to school and got your degrees in theater. You've all been working when many of our friends have stopped being actors. You all three are still plugging at it. And we're all at an age where we're trying to like sort of assess what we're doing with life in general. And you've got a lot of challenges that a lot of people don't have, and I don't think they understand. So let's start with that. Like, what is the greatest challenge you're facing right now as an artist in New York City?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for calling me a full-time artist. I appreciate that.
Well, you are. I mean, you guys are. Like, yes, we're going to get to how you all work in hospitality as well.
Yeah.
But your art is your number one priority more than anything else for all three of you. I really admire that.
Yeah, I try to make it my priority. Sometimes it's hard. Living in the city, you know, you got to make ends meet. You got to do what you got to do to pay those bills.
So what's the biggest challenge for you right now?
Right now, booking another show, just getting back out there, auditioning. You know, once one show ends, you know, you gotta be hungry for that next show. You don't want to get stuck doing what you don't want to do just to pay the bills, you know?
How about you, Joel?
Yeah, no, I mean, you talk about challenges, and I'd say opportunity. I mean, I think one of the hardest things for most of us is just getting in the door. Whether you have an agent or not, it's an extraordinarily glutted market. There are tons of people, and just actually getting in the doors for the opportunities you want. You know, I mean, actually, John and I were just talking about this. We're both auditioning, for a theater company that we wouldn't necessarily want to work with in the middle of nowhere, but we have to get those weeks for the healthcare and it fulfilling that desire, fulfilling the performance desire. But beyond the desire, like to really work on your craft and continue that going is what you'd rather be doing than saying, how would you like that cooked? You know, not to say that there isn't some fulfillment in that, whether it's monetary or otherwise, but you want to be doing what you do. So I think, yeah, it's the hardest thing.
Well, I think that's an interesting thing to point out, too. You mentioned to get your health insurance. So you're all in the Actors Union, the Equity Union, but you need how many weeks of union work in order to qualify for health care?
They just changed it. It's 11 weeks of work for 6 months, and it's 19. So I had 18 weeks of work last year.
So you were one week shy of having health care for a year.
Oh, I had 10, so that was just shy
also.
So
we're both 1 week. And so now we work, and the projects that we're both up for are former weeks that we had will expire before we get to use them. So that's in its own challenge. I think that the biggest thing though is, like, you know, consciously or not, there's an attachment to self-worth that happens when you're working on stuff. And so when you go through long periods of unemployment, it can have a really huge effect on you.
And then, you know, sometimes with, you know, contract negotiations, each theater is different. They have more money to offer. So your self-worth kind of, you know, teeters up and down based on what they're going to offer you, what they say that you're worth. And, you know, sometimes you have to take it because it's a job.
Well, how does that affect your confidence and your own feeling of self-worth? Because I think one thing that struck me after sort of the economy collapse was a lot of people who had really identified themselves by their job, then lost their job, and they had a huge crisis of who am I? But actors sort of get that constantly, because you can be on top of the world 1 second with a show that you love and then be unemployed for several months. So how do you find that affects your self-confidence in general as a human being?
I think it affects my self-confidence immensely. And unfortunately, you know, my confidence kind of lives and dies a lot of the time by whether or not I'm working, or even whether or not I had felt good about the audition I had that day. And it can change drastically from, you know, going in for an audition where I feel like, oh, I've got a shot at booking this, and then, wow, I didn't even get a call back, I'm worthless, to like going in for something where I was like, ah, this feels like a long shot, and then either getting closer, booking or whatever, and feeling on top of the world and feeling great. And so it can be really difficult sometimes, and I think it's important to try and find something outside of the work that can be a better indicator of, you know, worth, and not basing your worth solely on, you know, the state of your career.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult.
Well, what are some things that you guys have figured out to employ so that you don't get so easily sucked into the highs and the lows?
For me, it's, you know, just always having that connection to friends and family. You know, there's really, I know Benny's in a band, so that, you know, that helps,
and he's got this radio show
and
to
the radio
look forward
show
to every week.
You know, I just, you know, I try to just, you know, stay grounded and just keep focusing on, you know, my goals and what I want to do, and, you know, just the next job.
Artistic outlet is definitely important. I think it's something that even begin more and more so to tell kids in drama school these days, is that you should have other means of creative output, because if you don't, and you're constantly dependent on someone else to provide that, either that mirror of ego or sense of self-worth, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And you know, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, like, there are plenty of shows or things I've done where, like, you know, I was doing it, whether it was for health insurance or for weeks or for money, like, you know, we do projects that we don't have entirely our hearts in. We're still doing our craft, but,
and sometimes it's those projects that can, doing those projects can actually make you feel worse than not working at all.
Sure.
I've worked on some projects where, you know, I have felt so miserable about the work that I'm doing in it, because A, like, I feel either like miscast, or like I don't feel like I've don't love the director or the concept or the space has been provided for me to do my best work, or I'm not making enough money to be doing my, to like be able to knock out all of the distractions and be able to really focus enough on the work. And then I'm my, you know, I'm more miserable because I'm then hating on myself for like how badly I feel I'm doing it and how much I hate the process and
yeah,
all of
but
that.
Well, connected to that, which is always an important thing to kind of think about is the nature of our work is one of self-examination, of constant self-examination and evaluation. That being the case, we do this to ourselves all the time. And I think more so than most people in your average career asking yourself, why am I doing this? What am I doing? I'll throw in that, like, I had the good fortune to like do a show once for 2 years and to only do acting, you know, for one time in my life, which was incredible. I was incredibly well compensated and it was a beautiful, you know, show to be a part of. But some of the same drama and some of the same questions and some of the same difficulty arose, despite the fact that, you know, I was, you know, doing a project like that. So that reminded me that that baseline stays the same to a certain degree. So how you deal with it and how you manage it is almost more important than the job itself, even when you've reached a quote pinnacle. You know?
I want to jump in on you just mentioning you were on Broadway for 2 years when you were making really good money doing a beautiful, beautiful show, because that's when you and I met. And when you and I actually met on OkCupid, bringing this back to a dating show and to the point that I want to get to next, is that I remember when I met you after your show. I met you at Lincoln Center, which is one of the most romantic places in New York City, at night. And I remember just seeing you as being this person who is so grounded and confident. Because in a way of your work, you got, you know, that's the dream to be at in a show like War Horse at Lincoln Center. So then how does when that no longer, and you and I just listeners, like we didn't continue dating, but obviously we've kept in touch. How does, and I've seen you since then with these ebbs and flows. I've seen Benny, both you and John with these ebbs and flows. How do these and beautiful highs of getting to do art that you love to do, followed by these periods of self-examination and unemployment, how do they affect you with dating? All of us are single right now, just coincidentally. All of us have been in serious relationships, but how does the extremity of feeling so good about yourself and what you do, and then these big questions, how does that affect your confidence when you are meeting people, dating somebody seriously, going through a breakup?
Yeah.
You want to take that one?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I think, you touched on something earlier, which I think is really important in after 2008 and a lot of things that happened financially, that there's a degree to which actors are more used to handling these highs and lows than a lot of other people in more consistent track jobs. And so I almost sometimes feel like my lack of, you know, not being in a 9-to-5 and having the freedom that I've always been used to, like I'm just used to navigating the universe as it's becoming more and more for a lot of people. So I feel a certain amount of that is strong in terms of how I face things. I don't immediately go into a depression or a low just because I'm not doing a show necessarily. But I think that sometimes if you're not actively engaged in something that you care about and that you're engaged in, you can feel like less. And that can definitely affect how you interact with people, your confidence level when, let's say, you go into a date. We get more into dating sites. I wonder sometimes how many women are swiping left because they see that I'm an actor. And I said that with parentheses.
Swiping left is the good one?
No, that's
right,
the bad one.
Oh, okay.
Swiping right is good.
But I should know this.
That's the point about the parentheses is there are tons of people in the city that are actors. I'm sitting in a room right now with people who really are actors, who have trained to, and it's their craft.
Well, and also for me, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head right there. When I meet somebody either online or at a bar in person, and they ask me what I do, and I say an actor, usually the first thing that they say is, what restaurant do you work at?
Ouch.
And that's when I get up and walk away.
Ouch.
That's the first thing, that's the first thing they say?
Sometimes,
well, the second thing they say is, well, I have seen you in anything.
Right, right. But you know, like there's such a connotation to being an actor in New York. There's so many actors in New York, you know, working or not working. It doesn't matter. There's just so many actors. They've heard it before and they just feel like, oh, you just, you know, you're kind of a bum.
Well, there's also a lot of negative assumptions of actors, too, that you're going to be emotionally unstable.
Right.
Along with being like the financially unstable is its own thing because that's just sort of part and parcel to the career. But, you know, there's that, too. It's like, is this going to be a stable, normal human being?
But I think for me, the financial instability part is the part that has the most effect.
How so?
Because it can be really difficult when finances aren't where you would like them to be, which they rarely are, to like feel confident inviting someone into that situation.
Yeah, but what you're talking about, I think, goes beyond, let's say, just say the apartment you have or what you're able to provide on a date. I think that the root underneath that, which is more important, is your what sense, to what degree you feel grounded.
Absolutely.
Because that's really what, and that grounding can be financial, it can be emotional. But the point is if you're unemployed like we are when we do artistic jobs every 6 weeks to 2 months, what level to which you feel grounded is huge. And it's really harder to envision a future and building something when, as artists, you don't have a clear path, yeah. You know?
Speaking of that, I mean, do you guys... We're all in our, you know, mid-30s to a degree.
How dare you?
To you.
I'm 21.
Ew.
In your mind.
Going out for the dad roles. So you're all in your mid-30s, and especially, you know, we've all got friends getting married, having children, moving out of the city. A lot of the people that we all know have stopped being primarily artists. Have you thought about... You know, if you think about marriage and children and stability, have you thought about stopping acting and shifting careers? Or if not, how do you look to a future of, you know, growth in your personal life?
I think about leaving acting all the time.
I think we all do.
At times. Yeah. I mean, it's just part of being an actor, I think, part of being an artist, I think, is having doubts about your art and about your future and all of that. So yeah, I think about stopping all the time, and yet, like, in reality, I think I'm probably very far from stopping.
How do you envision a future with somebody else? It's
difficult. It depends on who the someone else is and what they want for their future. And so right now I'm trying to meet people, trying to, you know, find someone with whom I think I'm a good match. And then, like, depending on what their plans and what their goals are, then I can kind of decide what I might want for myself.
See, this is interesting to hear you say this, because, you know, it's really healthy and really good to hear some of the same kind of psychological boundaries that we set up or conditions that we set upon these relationships. I mean, look, stepping into any relationship is stepping into an unknown. You know, whether you have the confidence or not, it shouldn't matter all that much. If you feel strongly for someone, you can set it on a path that's indeterminate. What's difficult and frustrating is, you know, and I don't know about you, but I've dated a lawyer, I've dated a social worker. I, you know, try to avoid dating actresses because, I mean, like,
isn't that funny that we all say that? We all say, I don't want to date
actors. I don't date actors generally.
Because I don't avoid dating actors.
I don't avoid dating anybody, but
if I
were to pick,
yeah,
I would probably not want to date another actor.
Right. But, you know, I was dating a lawyer quite seriously when I got Warhorse, and, you know, it involved me moving a city and changing my life. And she was all excited. And we had a couple of talks where I was like, you know, you do realize that I'll never be available to go out to dinner with your friends on Friday night. Right. You do realize that we're never going anywhere for the weekend. I get 1 week off per year. And that's and if you need to get on board with that. And she didn't handle when I was in a show for 3 weeks well. Yeah. And I really, the relationship ended up falling apart. And part of it was because of that.
What was she excited about? She liked the idea that you were going to be on Broadway?
I think that she was excited about the idea that she was dating an actor who was successful. Honestly, she was excited about me, period. I need to give her a lot of credit. Like, she and I, we had a great connection, and she was excited about me.
It was an added bonus that... All right.
You know, it's a bonus that she was like, my boyfriend's an actor. He's going to be in this show. And people didn't realize. But, I mean, even most people knew that show was going to be a really big deal. Right. So that was a big deal. But that didn't really feed in necessarily to my ego. I was more concerned about how is this going to work if every time she gets off of work, I'm going to work.
Right. That's another thing that I was trying to bring up. The scheduling, when you date somebody that's not an actor, I mean, they get out of work at 5. You're just going into work at 5 or 6. You know, you get out at 11, you know, you're going to be bouncing around with your energy. You're not going to be ready to go to bed. They're already in bed. You know, that's another thing that's hard. And then on your weekends, you have two shows.
And our weekends are Sunday night and Tuesday morning.
So, well, speaking of that, I want to ask you guys one more question before we go into our break, because Ben and I often have the same conversation with chefs who say, my wife is in bed when I leave for the morning and she's in bed when I get home at night. And all three of you, on top of working as actors and that's your first priority, also work in hospitality, be it bartending or waitering. So what? So you can take this. You can each take this either way you want. But what is either? I can always tell, like Joel, I went to your bar a couple weeks ago, and just watching you interact with people, I was like, this guy, he's charismatic, he's smart, he's funny. It doesn't come off as being fake, it's genuine. It was a lot more interactive and fun to watch you interacting with people, and I think that's largely in part to having amazing people skills being an actor. John, you bartend. Ben, you've bartended and waitered before. So what is either the greatest contribution to your work as an actor by having a job in hospitality, or vice versa? In what way do you think that working as an actor makes you a better waiter, bartender?
Well, I think the two jobs, first of all, are very different, being a waiter and being a bartender, because people sit at a bar, they want to chat, they want a personality. Oftentimes at a table, they want you to take the order
and leave. Get their food right and leave, yeah.
So that's the first biggest difference. But for me, working in a bar, yeah, it's just all about personality. It's all about people that want to talk, that want to know about you, that want to know about your drinks or whatever. And it kind of makes it easier that we do what we do, that we're all actors, that we're personable, that we can chat with anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you study
about
people.
Anything.
Your job is studying people, yeah.
Waiting, however, is a different story.
Yeah. Facility with language, awareness of space, sense of timing, attention to detail, listening. And those are all skills that translate in both directions. I don't know about you guys. Sometimes I'll characters that come into New York City bars, and I'll look at some of my customers and go, okay, I'm going to steal that.
Lock that away.
I'm going to lock that away.
Or an accent.
That's good. Or an accent.
Yeah,
where
those
you're
are
like,
always the
holy
best.
Shit, this
well,
is
I saw
perfect.
You do a Scottish accent to the people at the bar that night, and it blew their minds. It was hysterical how excited they were by you doing a Scottish accent or whatever it was.
That
it was
stuff
really
is easy. That's entertainment.
Right.
You know? Like, and part of it's to entertain myself to get through the freaking shift, as opposed to just entertaining them.
Lately I've been serving more than I've been bartending, and I would say that the only effect that I can see in either direction is a negative one on my acting, which is that I'm running around stressed out, my shoulders up to my ears, I'm tense and I'm pissed off, and I am like totally disconnected from myself and from thinking about all of the things, and all my body in the way that I need to be thinking about my body as an actor is just like totally out the window, and I'm stressed and I'm running and I'm pissed, and it's like then I leave there and I need to like run to an audition, and I'm just like totally not in the place that I need to be when I'm trying to have a soft body and be sensitive and in touch with my emotions and my breath and my voice. So I would say that is kind of the thing that rings true for me the most right now, as far as the relationship between my, server job and my acting job. But I think we should take a quick break right now, because I know you want to desperately talk to us about the sexy time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a short break. Before we do, though, we want to invite you to check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate some money, because we need your money. We love your money. And
nonprofit radio.
Yeah.
We do this for the love.
If you love our show.
Which you do.
Which you know you do.
Which you know you do.
If you love these two,
please click
which
on,
we all do.
If you want us to eventually find lasting love, help us.
Yes. If you could find it in your heart, click on the beating heart and mention Love Bites in your message and donate to Heritage Radio. We'll be back.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA, designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
So for the rest of the show, we are going to talk about, what is it? What does Borat say? Like, happy,
brown
sexy
chicken, something? Brown cow.
There you go. That works. So this came about because Joel and I, in the same night where we were drinking at his bar and then went out, he was telling me about a night he was having with a lady and something that happened. And I was like, really? I didn't know that that's what that's like for men. And I started taking notes. So I'm just going to open this up, gentlemen. So we were talking specifically, I think, about Morning Wood and about like how you really can't control it completely and how it's not like you wake up like wanting to have sex. You just wake up and that's what your body does. And then you can easily be turned off. Like, it just sort of, anyway. So, and the penises do their own thing, and that like women can fake it because we don't have like body parts that move. And so let's just start off. What is the hardest thing about having a penis that women might not know?
She said hard.
I did say hard. What's the hardest thing about having phrasing. Thank penis? You.
Guys?
John?
Anybody? You hardest, guys just all got, you're all thing? Blushing now.
It's the hardest
that
thing.
That women might not know. Like, what do you, like, if you're in an intimate relationship with someone, whether it's the first or the 50th time.
Basic maintenance? Manscaping?
No.
Women shrunk you thing. In that. No. What's the hardest?
I don't find it hard having one. I mean,
well, that's disappointing.
Waka waka. What's something that women might not know about?
There's a few things that's hard about it. One is that it's like it's there and it's outside your body and it touches things and things touch it and like it feels things and like it, you know, you get aroused a lot, you know, and so like that's part of it, you know, is that like
totally.
Sometimes it's just out there and you know and you can tell that I'm aroused and you know and it's like all right, you know. I don't know what to do with this right now.
How much control do you have when that happens in a random circumstance?
I mean, it, you know, I'll be honest. It doesn't happen as much as it did when I was 15 years old, you know?
That's unfortunate.
Oh, you're not getting that.
Yeah, but sometimes when somebody, you know, cuddles up next to you or, you know, nestles into your neck, you know, you don't have any control over it.
Totally. But then, that's usually, you know, intentional. Like, well, you're trying to make things move.
But if you're having a first date on or a second date on a couch just watching a movie, you know, it's blatantly obvious that you're excited and you're kind of, you know, it's kind of embarrassing whether when it's, you know, first or second date.
If we dive right into kind of going off of the conversation we were having.
Dive into
let's
it,
say
Joel.
We ha 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 ha. No, I just edited myself three times. If we talk about like when you're already in that step of like having sex and whatever else, that or not having sex, depending on the case. What's interesting that I in the conversation we were having is about intentionality and about like how much you actually control that thing between your legs. The example we talked about was Morning Wood. You know, like, I don't know, I personally wake up with a raging hard on that I might have had for like an hour and a half. That doesn't mean that it's going to stay that way.
If you have it for 4 hours, call them a professional.
Yeah. Exactly.
Then you've taken one too many of those little
exactly.
Magic pills.
And meanwhile, you're going, well, I feel like that may have been hard for hours. Why can't I just do that whenever I tell it to? Because you don't. You don't. I mean, like, I don't know about you guys, but you don't control all the time. And in the morning in particular. But what's scary or interesting about the conversation is then rolling into if you've got it and then it goes, you know, it goes down and say you're in the midst of it and you're messing around, what the psychological effects it has on someone. I don't know. Have you ever had a woman say it when, let's say you had an erection and that thing went down and it wasn't about your desire, your lack of desire for the person, and you've had your partner say, you must not be that into me.
Well, I really want to get into the deeper level of that too, because when we started this show and he gave me full permission to talk about this, the filmmaker who we talked about in our first episode, he had gone through a huge period of mourning. He had lost both of his parents within a short period of time. He was going through a divorce and it took several weeks before he could even get hard. And it was a great, and luckily we were able to have a great conversation about it, about, you know, what mourning does physically. And we were able to have a wonderful physical connection. And eventually through both communication and still being physical together, we worked past that. But there was something in the back of my mind of this person is not attractive to me. And that's happened since then with another guy, again, going through a really hard period, and I'm not a hard not, period. Not a hard period.
Well,
but like emotionally, so how does in the long term of like mourning or grief or not, again going back to our conversation about confidence?
I mean,
how has that been at play for you?
I would say that it takes less than like mourning the death of someone in your life. It. For like something to happen like that, I mean,
too much whiskey,
right? Exactly, like
your bills in the back of your mind.
Exactly, like anything that happens in your mind,
Margaret Thatcher,
that, like comes into
naked on a cold day,
But you know what? I think those are just the mysteries of the opposite sex. I mean, I think guys wonder about whether or not a woman orgasms. Does that mean she's not into me? You know, like these are just things that,
well,
since
the
you don't
reason
have
why
those
I'm
parts,
curious is because women can fake it. And so the idea of like, how does it affect you when you can't fake it?
Yeah, but you asked a question earlier when we were preparing for this, and you were talking about women can fake it, so therefore their level of connection can be less.
I totally disagree. No, 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 that's not what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
That's not what I was saying. It's just that we sort of have a get out of jail free card.
You can scare his feelings.
You do.
That, like, I don't have a physically moving part that is going to give any message that I'm trying not to give.
Right,
you know,
right,
like
right,
that
right.
That was the point of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the point about being able to fake it, like, we can't fake it, right? And so to say that, yeah, there's your feelings. Very rarely would I say it's because, like, I'm not into you physically. Like, if I'm there with you and we're, like, engaged in a physical connection, most likely I'm wanting to go for it.
So how has that conversation gone with women when you've been in that situation?
I guess it depends on the situation.
It really does. I mean, like if you're in a situation where, and this sometimes, you know, I don't know if it's happened to you guys, but for me, reciprocation is the absolute key. If I don't feel that the partner that I'm with is engaged, and there can be a myriad of reasons about that. Like a ton of reasons. It could be about, you know, the person, it being a new relationship so that the woman doesn't necessarily feel super comfortable. Whatever those reasons may be, the point is I don't feel like it's an equal kind of sharing of engagement, then I'll have a conversation around that if I need to.
Ben, I want to jump in quickly for John, because John, it hasn't been applicable yet, but John is gay. So you deal with other men who also have this same problem. So how does this come up for men in a similar type of scenario?
That's tough. It hasn't really been a problem. I'm not really quite sure.
So you don't have that. So you haven't had that physically had that problem, but have you been on the other end of that?
Not yet.
Right. But have you been on the other end of that where?
Oh yeah. There were the other one. Yeah. And it's the same thing. It's there, you know, it has nothing to do with the attraction. It could be just thoughts in their head. It could be, you know, a huge plethora of
like
reasons.
Said,
maybe I shouldn't have gone
bills,
home with you. Maybe I shouldn't have, you know, had that last drink. Or maybe, you know, it's just whiskey, D-I-C-K.
You can say whiskey dick.
Okay.
And it's interesting because I think, Joel, you made a great point about feeling wanted by the other person, which I think is a huge part of it. And I think we were also talking before we came on the show, before the show started, a little bit about how do you spend the night with someone without having sex?
Yeah, I really want to talk about this because that came up from the conversation with Joel too, that he hadn't slept with this woman on the first time. I was like, how do you do that?
Well,
how do you
sleep in it? The first three times.
Well, I would argue that, like, I think there's something to be said about, to avoid situations like you were saying you had with the filmmaker, about developing a trust and developing certainty that the other person is into you before engaging in sex will decrease the chances that an incident like that will happen.
Sure, and even beyond the actual incident itself, like, you know, I'm in my, what would you say, my mid-30s?
You're older mid-30s.
Like, I've had plenty of sex, and I'm probably going to have, thank you, and I'm probably going to have plenty more, so I don't really care about that. At this juncture, even if it's something that, you know, look, we all know, a one-off is a one-off, let's say. Like, you meet someone at a bar, you lock eyes, you know it's on. You even at this age, you talk about it and don't leave things unsaid, and you're good. That's different. If I meet someone in this situation that we were talking about, I was generally going, is this a connection that I have with this person? Is this for real? And I wasn't, so what?
Well,
get it wet just for the night?
My question is, for there were two separate questions, because the whole like getting it up or not is one thing. The idea, and this is where I'm bashfully saying that I don't know how, I've never done this. I've never like been like, let's go spend a night together and then not have sex. Like, it's just sort of to me. So like, And there have been times, honestly, I'm going to admit this, honestly, like, I've had sex because, like, again, I'm an adult. It's not like I'm not being dangerous. It's not like I'm worried about notches in my belt or something. That sex is sex, and sometimes it's just physical, and sometimes if you're with somebody, it's sort of, it's almost like,
absolutely,
why not have sex?
Sure.
So I'm curious, though, as to if you're spending a night with someone where you want to foster intimacy, how you can, like, not have sex? Because to me, I don't know, maybe I just, I don't know. Like, I've never done that. So how do you do that?
Well, I think you do it by not having sex.
Yeah.
And I think intimacy can be greater, can be fostered more greatly sometimes by waiting and by making, like, by ensuring that when the sex does occur, that it's a more meaningful moment and a more intimate moment, as opposed to just like a, like you said, a one-off or something that becomes like, oh, that's what this relationship is, as opposed to like developing a relationship first that's based on other things and then having sex.
And I think that's the mistake that everybody makes in their 20s, is that you have sex first and, you know, then you expect a relationship, or you don't expect a relationship to come from that. I think the lessons that we've learned in our 30s is that we obviously want something more. We don't want a one-off. And, you know, you kind of take the time to develop that before you jump
into the sack.
And you asked about how, like, what broadens or deepens
intimacy. Yeah.
And the answer, I think, is connectedness. Beyond conversations about shared values and about, you know, which is really essential in terms of developing a partnership. But, like, if you're more connected to a person, and that could even, you know, be on a friend level, and then you go to an intimate place, it's going to be better.
I wonder, I hadn't thought about this before bringing up this conversation, but A, I was with one person until I was 28 years old, and so I sort of missed those 20-something years where you're sleeping with people. But also, I don't know this since there's not another woman in the room, but I feel like maybe I was accidentally ingrained in me as a woman that, like, to establish intimacy with a man, because a guy is always going to want sex. It's that stereotype that the guy always wants to have sex. I honestly don't know. I'm going to have to think about
this. So when you take a guy home, you feel obligated?
Yeah. Yeah. If I invite a guy over for dinner.
You don't feel like it's okay just to...
whether it's okay, part of it is that I am a woman who likes having sex, and so that's part of it. But there's definitely been guys that I've had sex with that I've been like, man, I didn't really want to have sex with him, but I invited him over, and we ate, and again, like, it's sort of, I wonder. I'm going to have to think about this.
Well, you're not obligated.
Yeah,
I'm going to put that out now.
Oh, I know. And I'm not. And that's not something as a woman I'd be like, oh, I'm going to have sex only because I asked this guy over and I'm obligated. Like I said, there's a part of me who's just like, I'm a woman who likes to have sex. But I'm honestly going to have to ponder whether this is something I've not realized has been ingrained in me as a woman to serve, you know, if that makes sense.
I mean, let's also clarify that we are three artistic,
sensitive
right.
men in this
self,
room
yeah.
who are, you know, perhaps in some ways a little more in tune with finding what we want and connecting with someone on a personal, more emotional level, communicating in a different way than some other people might.
Well
agreed.
Said, Benny.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, on another physical level, like, have you not ever been with someone and before the actual moment of the building toward is almost more titillating?
Of course, which is, yeah.
Great. So that you could apply that to your other question and just build it out.
Of course.
If you wait a couple of days,
work with
that. You know, it can be even that much more grand when the event happens.
Well, I'm leaving this conversation with something to ponder about myself. But thank you guys so much for coming in. We're out of time. So before we wrap up, listeners, I've asked the guys to, you know, Ben and I start the show saying that our age and we're single and we have talked at periods about what we are looking for. But since we are four single 30-somethings in here, if you guys are comfortable, why don't you share, you know, again, just say, my name is... I am this age. I'm straight or gay. This is what I'm looking for. Maybe with like three types of ways to go about that. Anybody want to start? Everybody's looking shy. Benny, why don't you?
Am I a part of this?
Oh, you're doing. Yeah, we're gonna do it. We're doing it too.
Oh, great. Well, I am 33. I'm straight and single. For me, passionate curiosity is a very important quality.
Did he steal your answer?
He totally just stole my answer.
I feel like he might have stolen mine too. That what I said.
He stole mine too.
That's huge.
Let's let him continue.
So
I put passionately creative.
And he stole my wallet for
so,
the record.
There was nothing in it.
he's a fucking
actor.
Artist.
So too is deep self awareness and a striving to grow one's own self-awareness and an interest and a fascination in what it means to be you. And so those are qualities I really look for and qualities that I feel like I connect with in another human being that could potentially form something meaningful for me. Joel, you want to?
Thanks,
be next?
Ben. Thanks. That was a great serve. I want to really date you now. Andy's got really great hair. And
he does. Well,
Jew hair.
I'm also a Jew, and I also don't. I don't have your hair anymore.
This is
also
single-acted Jews. Yeah,
this is the Jew panel.
How did I win at life today?
Okay. So what do I need to say? He's
so
stole my
Joel Reuben Gans.
Joel Reuben Gans. I'm 39. So mid 30s is generous. It's late 30s.
Sorry.
Curiosity for me is absolutely essential, and that can be applied in all kinds of ways. If someone's not curious about the world or themselves or life or any of the above or below stated things, I'm not interested. Looking for someone that I shared values, someone who likes to explore in all kinds of ways, both the external world and the internal world
and
of
the
connection.
Physical world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know that I need to be attracted to a person on a physical level, but I do find sometimes that the way you can connect to someone, what they believe in or are excited about, can be almost more exciting than just exterior trappings. So
lovely, ladies, Jonathan.
I'm just looking for somebody with good credit and maybe a car.
There's not a single person in this room who's got it. So you know.
I have really good credit, actually.
Oh, do you?
Me too.
I have good credit, too.
Oh, what the fuck?
Ben's one flaw. Please continue, John.
Jonathan Wiener, gay.
How old are you, Bubby?
Oh, you're gonna make me do that?
Oh, we're the same age. Come on,
35.
And we're almost. No, I'm younger.
Oh, bitch.
Fuck you.
But just recently 35, so it's like you're basically 34.
Basically.
I am looking for honesty. I'm looking for somebody that appreciates what somebody else brings to the table. Not everybody brings, a six-figure income to the table.
None of us, anyway.
Some people bring warmth and compassion and love, and that's something to be said. Somebody that respects what we do, what I do, what we all do. We're not, unfortunately, we're not curing cancer. We're not curing, the world's problems, but we do bring art to the world. We bring smiles. We bring, tears. We bring whatever. But it's a contribution, and I'm looking for somebody that respects that. And
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Oh, I love you guys so much. Okay. And I'm Jacqueline. I'm 34. I'm looking, I just wrote this down. So I'm 34 straight and looking for a dude who's passionately creative, deeply soulful, and who's got a great grasp of the big picture perspective. For me, that's a big deal.
Emphasis on big.
Yeah. Is this also where I say that I'm a massage therapist as well?
He is. He's got magic hands. Nice. Magic hands.
Nice.
All right. That is our show for today. So speaking of actors acting, Benny is leaving me for 2 weeks. He's going to Paris.
Congrats, Benny.
To be in the Paris Beckett Theater Festival. So I'm going to be heartbroken this time next Monday. Benny, break a leg. He's doing Waiting for Godot in Yiddish in Paris.
Blindfolded on one leg.
Yeah, so he's super badass, ladies. He's super badass. So next week, we're going to shake it up again. I'm going to have Daniel Holtzman, the chef owner of the Meatball Shops, as my co-host for the day. And we are going to welcome the ladies of This Is Why You're Single.
Are the single ladies going to be here?
They're actually
the one
not
week
single. Actually, neither of them is single.
Oh,
they
good.
Just
then
have,
I don't care.
They have
a
book.
It's false advertising.
They have a book and a podcast and a sketch comedy show about being single. So the ladies of This Is Why You're Single are going to be here next week with Daniel Holtzman. I believe he's single. I thought he was dating, but I believe he's single. He's a chum. He's a charm. He's wonderful. I can't wait to have him here, even though, Betty, I'm going to be missing you.
I'll miss you, too.
So he'll be filling in as we chat about that. So come back next week. Until then, thank you, Joel and John, for being here. Thank you to our engineer, David. He's awesome. Our theme song is You Better You Bet, covered by Robbie Gill, and we are Jacqueline Raposo and Ben Rosenblatt. I will be back here at the same time next week here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
See you in a few weeks.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.